Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money at Menards.
Hey nerds, welcome to episode 539 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast presented by Overdrive. Just Adam today, and I have a really lovely special Thursday interview for you. I know our interviews are usually on Mondays, but this week we had the Big Library Read program going on. We had a special event earlier this week, and also Jill was getting her second vaccine shot and a whole bunch of stuff. But fortunately, I was able to just kind of move our schedule around and get this interview out for you guys that I'm excited for you to hear. So I'm glad that it's coming out just a little bit earlier than it actually would have. I spoke with author Maria Kuznetsova, who has a new book out called Something Unbelievable. And her first book was called Oksana Behave, which was also delightful. But we just had a fabulous conversation. The book, and obviously, is if you've listened to any amount of time of the podcast, you know that we opened the conversation with Maria giving an introduction to Something Unbelievable. But it's basically all about a grandmother telling her granddaughter stories about her life in Kiev, Ukraine, and escaping the Nazis and wartime Soviet Union and all sorts of really wonderful stuff. But wonderful in the sense that it's a great book. Not obviously the experiences that the grandmother went through were wonderful. A bit of a slip of the tongue there on my part. But we just had a really fabulous conversation about family storytelling and looking into our own pasts by hearing stories from our parents and our grandparents, and you know what that really means, especially now. We've been thinking a lot about this type of thing during the pandemic and how much I miss my family and how close I am to being able to hang out with them again, and just really looking forward to asking my parents questions about just life in general and things of that nature. So I think you'll really enjoy it. We also laughed about the fact that because of her writing is fairly autobiographical, people in her life are now kind of like, hey, are you going to write about me in your next book? And so just really fun stuff there. And then we also get into the fact that Maria writes short stories and she writes longer, obviously, novels and all sorts of different stuff. And if she has a preference and the structure and everything. So just is a wonderful conversation that I think you guys will very much enjoy. And Something Unbelievable is a delightful book. So definitely go get a copy. Purchase it for yourself, recommend it to your library, borrow from your library, whatever you got to do. This is one of my favorite books of the year. If you want to get a hold of us, you can always reach us at professionalbooknerds.com. That's where you'll find all of our episodes over the last 5 years. You can search for specific authors or genres. It'll all come up, and you can just listen to past episodes if you'd like. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds, or just shoot us an email at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. We love hearing from you guys. Genuinely, if you take a minute or two to send us an email, it makes my day. I love seeing those and respond to everybody. So thank you. And also, if you haven't left us a review yet, if you want to leave a review about a specific episode or about the podcast in general that you enjoy, it makes our day too. So, and it helps people find us just a little bit more easily. Also, if you missed the Big Library Read program live event that we did with the author, I did a Zoom interview with him. You can go to Overdrive's YouTube page later this week. That'll be up, and I'll put a link in the bio for you. Okay. Enough housekeeping. Let's get to the good stuff. I'm really excited, so I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with Maria Kuznetsova on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Okay, so my novel, Something Unbelievable, is about a actress who is struggling in her job and just had a baby and is trying to kind of reboot her life. And to do that, she puts on a play based on her grandmother's World War II story. And the book takes place in partly New York City, partly in Kiev, and is actually told over Skype, which I guess is the old version of Zoom. And it shifts between the perspective of the grandmother and granddaughter, and their stories kind of resonate with each other's. So it's kind of about inheritance and what the grandmother has passed down to her granddaughter, whether she wanted to or not.
I have a bunch of stories about, or a bunch of questions about like storytelling and families and doing that type of thing. But before I get to that, I don't normally say like what inspired the story, because sometimes I think that's like a kind of a lazy author or like interview question. But you were just talking about you had a friend, so there this is kind of sort of close to home how this was inspired.
So it began in graduate school. We had an exercise. There's a class that was Ethan Kanan's long story class, and you had to write a story that was over 50 pages or something like that. So I had this story that my grandmother had told me from when she was a child in World War II in Kiev, Ukraine, and evacuated and lived in the Ural Mountains for a few years. And a bunch of weird things happened, like they almost starved to death. Her grandmother fell or pushed or threw herself under a train, depending on who you ask. There was an incident where they stole their neighbor who was hoarding food. They stole her chocolate, and there was like violence that ensued from that. So things like, there were like set pieces that were real that I was always interested in. And so I wrote it for that story, but for the class, it needed to span 50 years. That was the other part of the exercise. That had to be a long story that spanned 50 years. So I was like, okay, let's throw in like an inorganic frame of someone listening. Let's make it some granddaughter who, you know, whatever. And then as it kept going, I realized that the story was both about, because I don't like, I resist the narrative of like the old person is there to pass wisdom on to the new person, then they die, and you know, I wanted it to be about both of them discovering something about themselves and their lives. But I did want there to be a more contemporary person receiving the story who had a life of her own. So kind of late into the process, I then worked on having equal points of view for the actress and her grandmother. And she is inspired by my friend, Masha King, who actually does the audiobook recording for the Natasha character, which is so cool. I'm so like amazed that they made that happen. But she's my one friend, like in our immigrant community of like Jewish refugees who came over to New Jersey in 1991. There's like a whole, 50, 60 of us. She and I were the only two like weird artistic people at the time, we're the only ones who weren't like, doing what we should be doing, I guess. So it's been fun too. And she's like a real,
actress.
She's been on Madam Secretary as a recurring character, as this Russian woman. But she always gets these parts of like some Russian spy or prostitute or whoever who's like instantly killed. And so it's like I would tune in to watch my friend on TV and be like, here, she's hit over the head with a shovel and falls into her head. And it's like, yay. So I don't know. So I was interested in moving away from my own, like my first book, Oksana Behave, was more autobiographical and about the writing life. Kind of like, I wanted to think about how a different kind of artist would struggle. And so that's my long answer.
That's great. So one of the things you said that your grandmother, told you this story, and one of my like biggest regrets in life is when I was younger, and my grandpa passed away when I was like 12, and that's that age where you're just like, you don't really want to see your grandparents. Like, they come over for a holiday or something, you're like, okay, whatever, I don't care. And my grandmother on my mom or my dad's side had kind of water on the brain, which led to like dementia. Basically, she was in almost like a vegetated state by the time I was like old enough to want to learn more about our family. And so there's just like, beyond my parents, there's just kind of this like cutoff where like, I can't get those stories. And now all I want to do as a person who is involved in storytelling for a living, like all I want to know is these stories from them. But were you like, obviously a lot of this stuck with you because you wrote a novel that is, so a lot of it is in there. But like, when did your grandmother tell you these stories, and did you have that moment at that time that like you were able to appreciate it?
Yeah, I think she immigrated my family to America when I was 5 years old, and she lived with us for a while, and we shared a room for a while, which is, you know, like she was like a widow in her mid-50s who was like full of life, you know, working, dating. Mm-hmm. She has to live, I mean, it's horrible to think about, like, it's awful for her, but she's a big character. And so when I went to college, so I didn't think much about being like Russian or like from Ukraine. We considered ourselves Russian at the time because we were like Soviet people who spoke Russian now, I would say, right. You know, I'm from Ukraine. But I didn't think that much about where I came from until I went to college, and then my grandmother retired and moved back to Kiev to her old apartment where she lived. So then I visited her when I was like maybe 20 years old, and I was like, whoa, this, I felt so, it's such a strange feeling of like, everyone called me the American when I was there, but like when I was, you know, at college or whatever, everyone's like, she's like the weird immigrant girl, you know, yeah. Like, you know, it was a common feeling, I guess, of like belonging or not belonging, but
like other than feeling.
Yeah. This kind of third place where I found myself, where I wasn't, you know, American or Russian, but so I just got really interested in just like what happened over there before we left, and what happened to my parents and my grandmother. And it's not like I said, will you tell me all of your stories now so I could put them into a book, but I was already knew I wanted to be a writer. And one of my professors had said, like, why are you only writing about American characters? You know? And I just thought like, well, it's cause it's the stories I read were like that. Like, I didn't know about immigrant writers. Yeah. Really. It was like, I read the books my parents had at home, which were Russian classics or like, you know, Vonnegut, Hemingway, Twain, like the stuff that they were able to read in the Soviet Union. So it wasn't the most like diverse group of books, that they're all very good. So then I started kind of, then I went to my master's program and I started writing about, you know, these family stories that were sometimes my grandmother, sometimes like my great grandmother was born during a pogrom, you know? So like things like that made their way into my fiction. And so, so she told me like bits and pieces here and there. I don't know that we sat down and she told me the whole thing. It would have been over Skype, you know, like I remember her telling me in Kiev, walking in some gardens and her talking about like hiding under a train when they were bombed on the way to evacuation. At some point, and then, you know, she passed away 5 years ago, tomorrow actually, which I'll always remember because today is my birthday. So.
Well, happy birthday on a lighter note.
Thank you. I know, right? It's a fun way to spend my birthday. She, you know, wasn't there to follow up, but her sister is 8 years younger. And so, you know, I would talk to her over Zoom to get more of the story. And then of course, like you said, like you have your parents as the cutoff point. So then I would ask my family, like, what do you remember from what she said and which part? Because she never said like, my grandmother threw herself under that train. I still don't know what happened, but it was interesting to get different perspectives. Yeah. And that's why, you know, part of why I wrote about it, because I knew I would never really know what went on there. Mm-hmm. If I did, then it would be like journalism. I don't know, you know? So
yeah,
part of the fun of it.
It's really interesting. I was kind of smiling, just thinking about, I'm a big fan of Russian literature. I've always been like, I also was one of those people, like in high school I was reading, you know, like Dostoevsky and stuff, like just like one of those insufferable, like, please don't talk to me, Adam. But like I was thinking about the fact that something that made me laugh is I took a Russian literature class in college, but I feel like when you're younger, you're talking about not seeing any characters kind of like looked or sounded or like acted like you were in when you're younger, because I really feel like when you're younger and you're growing up, like you hear about these Russian like classics where it's like, so there's this book called War and Peace, or there's this story of Anastasia, and it's like there's like nothing in between. And I was like, but the thing I was laughing about is I growing up I read all these books and I loved them, and then in college was actually when my grandmother had passed away, but I don't know, I was kind of sad, but also like didn't really have a connection to her. And I found out, they're like, by the way, she has this collection of all these old books, you're the bookish one in the family, do you want to go look? I was like, absolutely. And she had all of these, my dad's side of our family is Jewish, so she had all of these like 100-year-old books that were like how Jewish women should act. And I'm like, okay, well, that is very of the time, but kind of funny to own. And then I saw, because my aunt told me, she's like, by the way, Grandma Lily like loved Russian literature, and I know you do. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna find some like gems I've never heard of. And I couldn't stop laughing because it was like these generic paperback versions of like Ibsen's A Doll's House. And I was like, okay, well, it's my grandmother's, so that's wonderful. But like, that's literally the first play I feel like I read when I was in high school, when they're like, we're gonna teach you about Russian writing. And it's like, it was like all of the books that you would expect. Like, did she love Russian literature, or did she love like the three things that are like everyone has to read? Yeah. It is interesting because I feel like I have this idea that I want to kind of interview my parents at some point to like write a story about it. And I do think there isn't, you know, I kind of asked you like how she told you stories, and I guess it would be weird for a grandmother to be like, let's sit down for 12 hours. And I'm like at the beginning of Titanic, like that never happens. You never sit down with someone for a day straight. Yeah. I imagine it would, but it is interesting that you were able to pick up those stories like throughout and like kind of remember them. Like, did you kind of know in the moment you're like, oh, this is the good stuff. Like, I always find myself stuck in those moments when my parents were telling me things.
Yeah. My grandma was 5 when it happened. So she, so a lot of it was like, okay, I'm not going to write about like war trauma happening to a 5-year-old. I feel like it can only go so many ways. So I think, I don't know when I knew that it should be like a full thing, but I just I just kind of wanted to get to the train station, you know, and get to her grandmother's death. And I felt like there was something there, but I wasn't sure, you know, it took a while to.
Yeah. Was that sort of where you had the 50 page one stop?
Yeah, it stopped. Yeah. I mean, the 50 page one was a pretty good outline for the main, you know, story. So I think it hit all the points. It stopped at the train station, then they left. Yeah. And then I don't think they had a afterward of what happened when they left. I think that it went to the present and she told the granddaughter what happened, or like what really happened with the necklace and everything. Spoiler alert. I mean, I think, part of it in revising it, I have in the first chapter, she was like, oh yeah, my grandmother fell under a train. Like I didn't want it to feel like a mystery, you know? So I just kind of said it. And then I hope that is be more about how it happened and not like what's the big secret.
I along those same lines, last year I interviewed this author named Deborah Wiles, and she wrote this book called Kent State. I actually think she might be from or lives down near issue now that I'm thinking about it. But she wrote this book called Kent State, and it's a very short kind of version of what happened in Kent State 50 years ago with the National Guard and everything. And, but it kind of tells everyone's side of the story. And it's really interesting. And the reason it was so interesting to me is both my parents were actually there. They were students at Kent State when this happened. Yeah. And like, they were on campus and it was this whole thing. And after I interviewed her, I told her this. I was like, when we were having our conversation for the podcast, she's like, you know more about this than like any mid-30s person should. And I was like, well, my parents were there, and so I was able to connect them, and like I via Zoom, of course, everything else from the past year. But it was one of those moments where like I just shut up and listened to them all talk, because I got to hear my parents like put themselves again in their early 20s at this place. And like that was definitely one of those moments in my life where I was like, I'm hearing something that I'm not supposed to, like I didn't know, and like there would be no organic way for me to be like, what was it like when you were 21, Mom? I know it's like not a question that would make a whole lot of sense, but do your parents tell you stories from when they were young? Like, it's just such an interesting, and I appreciate this concept of like writing a story about a story being told from a grandmother's point of view. Like, is this something that your parents do as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of our culture. is sitting around the table drinking and eating like 80 types of appetizers until it's really late. And then everyone kind of has their chance to tell their story, you know, and I'm very much a fly on the wall, like with you listening to your parents talk about Kent State. because, you know, I feel very like that third place where I'm at, where I'm not fully part of them, not fully part of this, America, you know, so I listen and it's hard to capture, you know. I mean, most of their stories are along the veins of like, humorous incidents that happened when I was, you know, broke and first came to America and didn't know what was going on, you know, we have a family friend who's like delivering pizza, and he'd never driven a car before in Oklahoma. And he like parked the car on top of a hill and then he delivered it. And then he was like, came back and he was like, the car was stolen. And then they found that it like, he didn't, you know, put the, didn't know
the hell out of it.
Yeah. And just rolled right down, you know, which I'm sure was horrible at the time. So they're mostly in that vein, you know, like they're more like little anecdotes. Out of that, you know, some kind of actual story emerges, I think. But yeah, it's rarely that I would ask sometimes. Yeah, I think I would, but a lot of it would come organically. And then,
I'm getting flashbacks of Seder meals that we would do for like Passover at my grandmother's house. Cause I do like, those are the two things I remember. My dad is a non-practicing Jew, in fact, in the sense that he got like kicked out of three Hebrew schools. Like, he desperately did not want to be religious. Yeah, he was quite a character. He still is, but he has a couple of siblings who, two brothers especially, who are like, it's almost like a comedy act. Like, I remember like sitting around, like we're supposed to be going, you know, like dipping our knives in the wine, and you know, they're just like cracking jokes. But, like, out of those jokes and those like lighthearted moments did like come these little nuggets of stories that I was really young then, but like I would at some point would ask my dad, like, wait, hold on, what was that like the four of you sharing a room in an attic and like all these different things. Like, it is interesting how through comedy you can sort of pull actual stories, I suppose.
Like, comedy is like pain plus time equals comedy, or
yeah,
like
tragedy
that.
Plus time equals comedy.
Yeah So I think a lot of those things at the time were not funny, you know, but but now it is kind of funny. I don't know. It's a tricky thing because my parents are really good storytellers and it's very intimidating, but mostly I just listen and hope to learn more. But now they have this thing where, you know, because my first book, Oksana Behave, was very autobiographical, though there are a lot of things I would argue were not true. But now after that, they're like, okay, be careful what you say around her, you know? And like, anytime they tell me like, this happened to this family friend, it's horrible, don't put this in your book, you know? Like, but they're like really serious. I mean, I don't think I used any random, but now, my husband read the opening of this book. He's like, you stole this one thing from the story I told you. And I like didn't even realize, but.
This is good to know because I'm working on a manuscript and it's not my story, but I was the last graduating class of a high school before it closed.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, yeah, it was a very weird experience. And so I'm writing a book where that happens.
Yeah.
And I do find myself putting stories in about like my friends, and then like I'll like, you know, blatantly change who it is so that it's not obvious. But like, this is good to know because I definitely have stories about like my siblings, my parents, and I feel I'm like terrified to show them any version of it until like I get a literary agent and be like, it's too late. I already sold this.
It's out there.
That's good to know. This is good stuff.
Yeah. I think my like, until I remember like getting the galleys or the proofs, I think it was just pages, but it was like in the real font of my first novel, like real pages. And then my daughter was just born, and I remember I opened it and I was like, oh shit, it's like too late. it was way too late. It was like a year too late, but until I saw it in like real font, I was like, oh, like, should I call a few people and explain myself?
Yeah.
You know, so, but I guess my, not that you're asking for advice, but my take on autobiographical writing, because people do ask, is like, I guess, like, for the best writing, I think you do what I did, which is be kind of oblivious and like don't think about the people, and then later ask for forgiveness, not permission, you know, because otherwise, like, you're gonna, like, now that I'm, you know, working on more stuff, you know, I'm more conscious of it after having published a book, and I think it's like, slowing me down in a way. I mean, I understand you shouldn't like exploit everybody, you know, but to get like to the good stuff, you know, it's like important to hope that your family friends will just be supportive. And
yeah, well, and also like, I think it's, I mean, first off, I've had so many authors. I mean, like, you know, all writing is at least a little bit autobiographical. Like, that's why I've stopped. I don't ask too often, like, which of your characters do you see yourself in? Because, like, most authors would be like, all of them. I literally wrote the whole book. Like, it's me. What are you talking about? But I know what you mean. It's so funny, like, thinking about, like, even the podcast. Like, we'll have some episodes where we talk about, like, pretty heavy stuff. And, like, I'll have, like, my dad be like, yeah, I'm sorry. I just not, like, a big podcast guy. And I'm like, actually, that's great. I don't need you listening to me. Yeah. Like, this is, like, almost like therapy for me. I don't need you to hear me talk for hours about reasons I'm upset from a book. Like, it's okay. Don't listen. So, like, maybe that's what I'll do if I can get this book published, be like, actually, guys, like, buy some copies, put them on your shelf. Don't open them. Like, complete strangers. Speaking of, like, the fact that you have, you know, you've written stuff that is kind of autobiographical. You've also, you know, written fiction and nonfiction. You have a short story that was just put up on, I think it was the Rumpus. It's kind of magical realism type of stuff. And, like, do you have a preference? Because you were talking about how now you're sort of aware when you're writing stories about people. Like, do you have a preference between kind of pulling things from your life or just, like, pulling stuff completely out of your brain?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I can't, I mean, some authors are more like, it's fiction. I'm pretty open about, like, it's all pretty real and I just manipulate it, you know? Yeah. So I think it really depends on what mood I'm in, you know? Mm. So the story that you read, Boy of My Dreams, it's the premise is, well, you've read it, but, you know, it's a girl who's has some kind of existential problem and the dad tries to help her with his magical science and things go wrong. I have like 20 of those, you know, so that's like a side project that is still about me, you know, exploring some, but it's more like I have this existential question, like, you know, what, like, I'm working on that's like, why do bad things happen? Like, why did this bad thing happen to me? You know? Mm-hmm. And so in the story I'm working on, it's like, the dad is like, oh, drink this. And then it'll show you the five things you did as a child to make this current bad thing happen to you. And it's, you know, which is like ridiculous because, you know, there's nothing that could explain one thing, you know, but I find that when I'm writing in that kind of magical realist speculative space, I can have a little more fun and it can feel a little more freeing because it's like, it has its own rules.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but I feel like just as human beings, we are just intelligent enough as like an animal. Like, we're just as intelligent. We're just intelligent enough to like question why we're all here and all those like big questions where it's like, if the answer really is it's random, like that is just a mind fuck. It's like, we're like, I can't deal with that. So I do think it helps to be like, even if it's, you know, take this conch and drink some milk out of it, like, and you'll find answers, like, whatever the reason that you can get answers, I think it does help, as like crazy as it is. So I understand, because I also ask those questions all the time. Like, I don't know about you, but even just like little things, like I will be walking one of my dogs and I'll look up into the sky at night and be like, how the hell are there stars up there? And then like I'll freak out and I'm like, I need to make up a fake story about this or else I'll freak out.
I think the first story I wrote that was of that speculative whatever genre was when my grandmother passed away, actually. And the question, so my mom's family's Jewish, or side of the family is mostly Jewish. My dad's is not, which I guess doesn't matter. But anyway, she was like a typical Soviet atheist. And the question was like, if an atheist, like an avowed atheist dies, like, where do you visit them in your imagination? You know, like, am I allowed to picture her like being around in the ether if she doesn't believe that she would be, you know what I mean? So I kind of, that was like my first foray into like, you know, exploring those things that have answers.
Like I said, my dad is a non-practicing Jew and he's not religious at all. If you don't think haven't thought a billion times over my life, like, okay, well, he's one of the best human beings I've ever met, but he's not religious. What does that mean? Yeah, I think about that shit all the time. It's very, very frustrating. Do you have a length of story that you prefer to write? Because you've written a ton of short stories. You had a couple of novels now. Like, is there, I've had people tell me that short stories are more challenging because it has to be like, you know, what, under 40,000 words or something. I'm trying to remember like the specifics, but do you have a preferred?
Yeah, I think it depends on what. So I think that the short sciencey investigative stories, they tend to be like pretty short, like 5 to 8 pages. And Yeah, I just love them. They're like little puzzles I try to figure out that have a formula, but that changes a little bit each time. So I think those are really fun. And then when I write autobiographical stuff, my novel, Oxana Behave, is kind of made up of chapters, which are really stories, and then I'm working on more Oxana stuff. Like, those tend to be longer. I think they're more challenging, but more emotionally rewarding, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the things, because you teach English, that's obvious to you, it's your job, but like, should clarify that, would be like, you are a professor, and for people listening, it should be obvious that an author would teach it. I guess it would be crazy if you're like, no, I'm a biochemistry, it's just like, yeah. But are there, having grown up with this feeling of like other, and not really being maybe sure where you belong, but also like all these different types of stories that clearly stuck with you throughout, like, are those things that you suggest to your students to focus on? Or do you kind of think like, that's just your particular path? And like, I'm curious, I don't get to ask like teachers many questions about their students.
Like, how does my experience affect my syllabus?
That's a way better way of asking the question. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I try because my students in Alabama are mostly not immigrants, you know, so
I can imagine what they look like.
Yeah. But they are really interested in, and I've taught students in, in Iowa as a graduate student, and California as a graduate student, and by far from any group of people, they write about place the most. Like, they're obsessed with the South and being from the South and what it means and the complications, which makes sense, right? Which is really interesting to me. So I try to, sneak in or whatever, like, stuff that I like, kind of frame it as like a lot of the immigrant stuff. So like David Bismarck, do I have it here? Everything's in a pile, you know?
Sorry. Oh yeah, obviously.
Where's the pile? But David Bismozgis has a book called Natasha and Other Stories. Mm-hmm. Jhumpa Lahiri's Unaccustomed Earth has a bunch of younger characters. Girl by Jamaica Kincaid. I try to frame it as being about place and also being about coming of age, you know? Because I think that those are things that everyone can relate to, as opposed to like, let's study the immigrant experience, which of course is an experience that's very important. And also you could relate to it on like, everyone doesn't feels like they don't belong in some way, you know, but I think that's stuff that I sneak in for sure. Cause it's stuff I love. And I think they respond pretty well to like younger characters who are in a new place. Everything feels strange. And
I don't know if are you familiar with Wright Thompson?
The Pappy.
Yeah, Pappy Land. Yeah, okay. So great. It's a great book. And that's what I was actually going to recommend like to your students, because it's, you talking about how much they love, how people from the South love the fact that they're from the South. Yeah. Wright Thompson, I feel like he's the shining example of that, because he's just like a once in a generation talent from a writing standpoint, but good God, does he love everything about being Southern, and he is proud of it. But like the book, one thing I will say about it is extremely Southern in the sense where he's like, I'm going to tell you about Churchill Downs and we're going to talk all about horse racing for four chapters, but it is very much in a coming of age. Cause he also talks about his family and having a child for the first time and stuff. And it is like, it's like that perfect combination of the two things you were just talking about, of your students being like, oh wow, that we love our accent and we love the 100 degrees and the humidity down here, but also like it's a person that's in a place and talks about what that means to them. I feel like where you're at, where you grew up, I do feel like has a big, not just like the stories that you hear and that you feel, but like just simply, it's a running joke. I grew up in Lorain, Ohio, which is where Toni Morrison is from. And I feel like I have to inject that into every conversation and every story I write. And it's just like a thing. And I feel like the different locations in the country, especially, like, it would be weird if they didn't frame their stories, I guess.
Yeah. And I think they're, you know, they're mostly not like, the South is awesome. It's more like the complications of like, understanding how people think, you know, the South is, and and my grad students too do it, you know, and it's just interesting to me because I've kind of lived in New Jersey and Florida and Ohio and California and Iowa and Alabama now. And I'm just like, so I'm really interested in people who have lived in one place their whole life and really into just digging in there. Yeah, so I think when I frame things that way, it makes it fun.
Helps them a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so towards the end of our conversations, we like to ask 9 lighthearted questions. Not that anything I asked you was like super like grilling into your soul, I don't think. But we just like to ask these, like, it just gives people a little bit of like fun background random questions. So the first one is, what's the last book you finished reading?
Oh, Convenience Store Woman by Sayaka Murata.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite place to read?
Oh, right now it's my bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this used to be a much more like randomized question for people, but now none of us really leave our homes ever. So they're like either the chair I'm sitting in or my bed. What do you mean? I have 2 places I can sit.
Pretty much.
What do you remember the book that made you fall in love with reading when you were younger?
Probably it was either the Boxcar Children books or the Sweet Valley High books.
Yeah.
Kind of the 2.
Love Boxcar Show. That's amazing. Yeah. When we are allowed to go places again, what's one place you'd like to travel to that you have not yet been?
Oh, I've never been. I'd like to go to Peru.
Yeah, it's a good one. Do you have a favorite holiday?
I'd say Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Are you a coffee person or a tea person?
Coffee. I'm drinking it.
instant answer. Cats or dogs?
What? Oh, cats.
Cats. Okay. Favorite food?
Favorite food. Oh gosh. I'd say sushi. I should say something Russian, you know, but
it's all right. Sushi's delicious. It's fine. And then, if you could have dinner with one person, alive or dead, who would you pick?
Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, that was really quick. Normally people give me that look like, oh my God, I don't know. That's just
me. We just finished, I'm teaching a humor class for my grad students and we just finished Slaughterhouse-5. And I'm like, yeah. I've been thinking a lot about wanting to have met him.
Absolutely, that's perfect. Okay, last question for you. Sure. What do you hope readers take away from Something Unbelievable?
You know, I hope that they just kind of take away something about the complications of family and the ties that bind us, the things that make us different, and just kind of as much as the book, you know, has a cast of characters in the front and has all these different sections, kind of just the randomness of how we're all thrown on this earth trying to figure things out. Yeah.
That's absolutely perfect. Maria, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was so fun.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Science, science, science! Science, science! Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes! Mm. Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.